Welcome to the Always On Podcast. I'm Duncan McPherson, your host. I appreciate you being here. Purpose of this podcast is to provide our audience, which are very high caliber, fee-for-service professionals, to keep working on their business and on themselves personally and professionally. And to that end, very excited to have Tom Deans, returning guest, talking about how a financial advisor can enhance their fee worthiness, go further into a family tree, make themselves indispensable, and ultimately become more referable by addressing one of the biggest unmet needs of self-made, successful first-generation business owners and professionals, and that is continuity and succession. We covered a lot of ground. Tom has written a great book, Every Family's Business, Willing Wisdom, and he has a new book coming out called The Happy Inheritor. I encourage you to check him out and learn more. Hope you enjoy this conversation, and if you do, please like and share. And of course, if you have any ideas for subject matter down the road that you think we should cover, just let us know. Okay, thanks for listening. Bye for now. Always a special treat to be joined by my friend Tom Deans, author, thought leader. This call actually came together coincidentally because we bumped into each other in an airport recently. Tom was heading west, I was heading east. But Tom, great to see you. And right up front, share with everybody who might not know you what it is you do, a little bit about your background and how you interact and bring value to a financial professional and their clients.
Well, great to be here, Duncan. I don't want to turn this into the Tom Deans hour. So super, super brief. Ran a large family business after a career in banking. It was for 8 years. I was CEO of a large plastics manufacturing business, which is a bizarre segue into doing what I do right now. But had an unsolicited offer to sell that family business. Took it. And that was February 8th, 2007. So if you cast your mind back, that was pretty fabulous timing. We're not that smart. We were really lucky. And I found myself working for the new owners. After about 6 months, they asked me to go home. I don't know if you know this, Duncan, but family members make awful employees. We don't take direction very well. And so I said, absolutely. They said, if they needed me, could they call me? I said, absolutely. I went home and I golfed for 2 weeks. And was bored out of my brain and found myself one morning writing a book called Every Family's Business. It took me 30 days to write that book. And that led to a 17-year career as a full-time professional speaker. My way of saying I do not consult, no consulting, literally full-time speaker, conference speaker. Advisors hire me to do client events. I do family meeting facilitations, although I never return for a second meeting. I always like to make that clear, not consulting. So I'm a little bit of a disturber. I'm okay with that. I'm at peace with myself, Duncan. I go in, I stir it up, I leave often through the back door, never to return again. I'm a thought leader. I mix it up. I get people thinking and talking. I help advisors get their clients unstuck and moving faster and deeper with their planning. That's it. 17 years, 2,000 paid speeches in 28 countries. I'm exhausted. And of course, as I told you in the airport, I'm really super excited. I have my third book, the last book in the trilogy, the last book I'll ever write. This thing killed me. They're brutal. They're brutal to write, as you know. There's 10 years in between my second book and this book. This one has been brewing in me for a while, and it finally came out, finally found the right time. It's emerged from the fingertips. It's in the hands of my editor. We'll have that out on bookshelves at around the beginning of April. It's called The Happy Inheritor, and I think that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, when I first became acquainted with you, I read Every Family's Business, and now I'm like a broken record telling any financial professional who will listen that this is such a profound unmet need that a financial advisor can address for a self-made, affluent client running a successful business with all kinds of family dynamics. this is a value-added service that people really find to be of value, because so many people kick the can down the road. And when a financial advisor can step in and, you know, just basically demystify what it means to get their house in order, the liberation that comes to a client and the indispensability that advisor develops in that relationship is profound. So my question is, 10 years have come and gone, what's the difference between this new book and Every Family's Business?
Well, Every Family's Business is really a book written for, as the title would suggest, for family business owners, which I thought was a niche market when I wrote the book. I had no idea that 90% of all businesses in Canada and the United States are family owned and controlled. Like, they're Walmarts, they're corner stores, and everything in between. Every sector, farming, manufacturing, retail, wholesale. If you're a financial advisor, you have a business owner client, you have a 90% chance that they're struggling with the kind of issues that I write about in the book, which is, when do I invite my children into my business? Great. Now that I have, how do I get out? What happens when you get an unsolicited offer? How do you sell your business when your children are driving a lifestyle and an income from a business? These business owners paint themselves into a corner. They have no idea how to get out, and they're emotionally stuck. So Every Family's Business, I was very fortunate to have a very, very wise father. When I joined, he made it very clear that was a business that I could purchase at full market value based on a third party valuation, or it was a business that I could help him sell. And in either scenario, we could both make money. So before I joined, we were talking about how we can get out. So it's an idea that's resonated with me, and I write about continuously, this idea of what Covey described as beginning with the end in mind. It's something that business owners seldom do. They start a business, they hoard their wealth inside their business and the equity of the business, and they have no idea how to get it out, and they're stuck. So that little book went on to sell over 1 million copies, primarily because it carried with it a very controversial message, which to this day, family business consultants, they still refer to me as the Dr. Kevorkian of family businesses. Like, they are not happy with this message. Because instead of saying, how do you perpetuate a family business forever? I come along and say, well, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you explore how to get out of a family business with your family relationships intact and your wealth intact? And that little book, I think, was a book that most business owners were waiting to be written. It really resonated. There were so many business owners that thought, finally, all the book does is give them permission to take care of themselves and to ultimately sell that business, sell it to family, sell it to an employee, sell it to a private equity firm, sell it to a strategic buyer. I don't care. I'm agnostic. But please do not die at your desk and have those shares transition to a surviving spouse who has no idea how to run that business. That is one of the nastiest things that people can do, business owner can do, is not take care and clean up their own mess, and they leave it for others. And I tell business owners all the time, if that's your plan, you will be remembered, just not fondly. So that book was kind of set the stage for the second book, which was Willing Wisdom, which tried to explain why it is that half of all business owners don't even have a will. And then I follow that up with the third book, which is really getting into, it's a more granular book. It's a fun book. It's called The Happy Inheritor, which really looks at the role of family meetings and the role of advisors in facilitating these family meetings, helping families gather to talk about the orderly transition of difficult to transition assets and family businesses, family vacation homes, art collections, cars, things that are hard to divide. That's what the family meeting is really ideal for. And very few families of affluence are doing it. And the ones that do have a huge, huge head start. And there is one group of professionals that is not very happy with the emergence of family meetings. It's estate litigation attorneys, lawyers. They hate this book. They loathe it. They are not going to be happy with this book, because the average family that enters into litigation over their parents' estate The bill's coming in around $500,000, upwards of $1 million for simple litigation. Remember, in estate litigation, the estate pays all the legal fees. You got five kids, you've got six lawyers, one for each of the kids and one for the estate. The estate pays all the bills. It is insane. You don't think the lawyers know that? Only lawyers, only litigation lawyers could design a profession and a business model like that. So the reality is there's a lot of families. The courts are absolutely jammed full of families in dispute, primarily because they were never offered another path. And that's what The Happy Inheritor is doing. The subtitle I should note for this new book is How Successful Families Prepare Heirs and Transition Wealth. It's a really, it's an enormous subject, especially when you consider that today, 300 million will be inherited in Canada, and that 10-to-1 ratio, 3 billion in the US today, tomorrow, and every day for the next 10 years. It is a staggering tsunami of wealth that is in motion between generations.
Okay, that was a profound couple of minutes, and I hope a financial professional is listening in terms of how they can get out in front of this, and especially for the clients who have kicked the can down the road. You know, it's interesting from a credibility perspective, because you've been there, you've done that. Not just the fact that you've interacted with financial advisors and presented to people and they've responded, but you did it yourself. And I want to share something with you. I remember vividly reading Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth. Understanding, okay, the difference between getting a job and creating a job and working in a business, working on a business, really resonated with me. Really had respect for Michael Gerber, still do. And then a couple of years after that, I stumbled across his follow-up book called The PowerPoint, where he was an open book, very forthright around his failures. And he talked about how he created, through growth, a catastrophe of a business. And I thought to myself at that time, how can somebody blow up while they're growing? I mean, isn't everything great when you're growing? My takeaway was that, okay, you're grinding, your head is down, and you take your eye off the ball a little bit because you're just building this thing, and certain things, there's unintended consequences. And I'm sure that's why for a lot of business owners, as they're growing, there's things that just aren't a priority. I can put this off. And we all know how things happen. They happen gradually and then suddenly, and then there is a mess. So I'd love to hear your perspective on that. And for everybody, the controversial, disruptive side of Tom, he's just the voice of reason. And he's giving people permission to address this, to secure their legacy. This is something I really want to convey. But Tom, talk a little bit about when you present on behalf of a financial advisor, who's in the room? How does the advisor participate? What kind of feedback do the advisor's clients have after you presented? I'd like to peel that back a little bit.
Yeah, so when I'm doing client appreciation events, this is an advisor who often partners with an accounting firm or a law firm, mm-hmm. and they'll have 50 to 150 people in the room. It's often at a golf course, at a hotel. They're kind of intimate events. They're not huge events with rock music pounding away, and there's no product push. I mean, this is pure client education, and that is never lost on people who carve out some of their precious time. And business owners are busy. They really loathe going out to an event and getting pitched on something, or the pitch and switch. They get told they're going to get something. They go out and they get pitched product endlessly. They get frustrated with that. This is a family event. So the business owner arrives with their spouse, crucial, by the way, for business succession planning and estate planning. When spouses of business owners understand that when there's a lack of planning, they're going to be dealing with the mess, they often drive. The chief emotional officer is the one that's going to drive that business succession plan. So, you know, advisors need to be really kind of aware of that. So these family events are, I'm typically speaking 45 minutes and I open it up for Q&A. That's usually 15 minutes. And then I do something that's really fun. I will bring the financial advisor, the accountant, the lawyer onto the to the front of the room, and then I run a little bit of a panel discussion. That's my way of taking the spotlight off me and switching it on to the practitioner who's going to take the ideas that I've just shared and breathe life into them long after I'm gone. And so these events are, I would say it's 85% client retention, 15% acquisition. Then I sign books, have some nice chats, and off I go. As I said, usually to never return again. So I'm there to start conversations. I'm really not looking for follow-up work. That's not what I do. My job is to give a really, really good speech. You know, it's a referral business. You give a good speech, you walk out with two more. That's the model.
Right. And the advisors, strategic partners, the accountant, the attorney, whatever the case may be, they can fulfill on the technical ability. You just lit a fire. But what I love about this, you're absolutely right. We're in an era, I'm telling advisors all the time, develop intellectual property, use content and value added as part of your business development driver. And, you know, a lot of people talk a good game about value added, but it's only value added if it's something the addressable audience really finds to be of value. And I'm sure they sit here going, oh my gosh, this guy, Tom Deans, is talking to me. It's like he's got a drone spying on my business and my family, and I've got to address this. Now, I'm curious, the happy inheritor to me seems like you've got a dual addressable audience there. You're speaking not just to the recipient of the money, you're talking to the first generation of that money. That's a pretty insightful position to take, in my view.
Yeah, it was there's a reason why it took me 10 years to write this book. It is a very, very delicate subject. There are a lot of people with significant wealth that are very concerned about what it will do to the recipient. They're worried about damaging their children. They wrap the subject in silence. They often take their concerns and worry to their grave. So we know that many estate plans are being revealed at the reading of the will. If there is one, there's a 50% chance, even with wealthy people, that there's no documents. It's crazy. There's 125 million American adults without a will. It's insane, especially when you consider 3 billion is being inherited today. So a lot of these people are taking these secrets to the grave, and it's causing incredible turmoil inside families. So what I've been really trying to do is build this, oh my gosh, flip the narrative and say, there's huge upside for the person who is disclosing. And that upside is that family members, sure, they're learning what they may be inheriting, but it is a conversation that leads into another conversation about late in life care. There is reciprocity in most families when they actually agree to have a family meeting with their trusted advisors present. The rising generation are learning what is there and what's moving and when it's moving and how that wealth is moving. And the reciprocity is the most elderly generation is learning about and explaining what they want, what their hopes and what their fears are about aging. Where do they want to age? Do they want to age in place? Do they want to move to a smaller home? These are the kind of practical conversations that are taking place in family meetings with advisors present. Why is this good for the advisor? We know that 80% of inherited wealth packs up and moves to a new advisor. I can think of no other business where you work hard to forge deep, trusting relationships over the course of decades, only to watch your client die and whoosh, gone. I don't get it. Especially when the remedy is so simple. This idea of a family meeting and offering to work with the rising generation to teach them how to invest, to teach them how to save. Part of the reason for the secrecy is the cognitive dissonance among the most senior generation. Here's what they're thinking. I love my children, but if I tell them what they're going to get, they will become weak and lazy. I love my children, I worry about my children. Two competing values in opposition. That's cognitive dissonance. And so the result is nothing. They're frozen. What the family meeting does is help resolve that cognitive dissonance by introducing your trusted advisor to your children and start to flow living gifts in real time, now, not when you're dead, but now, small amounts. Coach it, manage it, help it, resource it. That is where the fear of inherited wealth recedes. It's a beautiful idea. It's a tricky subject, but it is, I've presented inside hundreds of family meetings. To watch a family overcome this fear of what wealth will do to the next generation is something to behold.
Well, and you're a conduit, you're a third party. You're not leaving people to their own devices to figure it out, because the emotional element is so incredibly profound. Interesting, I'd like your take on this. I had a conversation with a financial advisor recently. I lit a fire under him around AI. I said, I want you to start looking at your business through the lens of your clients and go on to ChatGPT and start asking what questions are on the mind of a high value client around their financial advisor. What keeps them up at night? All of these different things. Great exercise. It then went to me suggesting that he developed a white paper, some intellectual property and thought leadership. So I asked him to summarize the book Beer Money. Beer Money is just a jarring window into the dysfunction of second generation, third generation wealth.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Entitle Mania, Millionaire Next Door, and Every Family's Business. And I said, to synthesize those summaries using AI, pay tribute to where you source the information, but just create this sort of composite. And so he's in the process of that. And then, Tom, I said, I want you to also try to capture some of the essence of the book Into Thin Air by Jon Krakauer as a bridge to take all of that content and information and tie it to the representation of the role of the advisor, who is essentially the Sherpa. The Sherpa who's not just trying to get somebody to the summit of Mount Everest, but to get them back down safely. And the metaphor here, Tom, is when a first-generation affluent business owner has their liquidity event, that's planting the flag on the summit. Then they have the rest of their life, the family dynamics. That's where the advisor can become indispensable. The reason why Every Family's Business to me is so profoundly relevant to that concept is because, first of all, the format and the tone is actually interesting on a relatively dry topic. And it's a nice balance of quantitative and qualitative. There's some anecdotal elements, but there's also checklists and predictive elements. Does the happy inheritor go there as well? Is it just a story, or does it get into the weeds and the nuts and bolts?
I write all my books the same way. There's a well-worn formula. If you provide too much data, too much granular information, even if it's brilliant, mind-blowing stuff, it'll never get read. It'll never get consumed. If you write a book and it's too entertaining, if you make the subject matter too trite, it'll get tossed. It won't be taken seriously. Right. It is a phenomenally difficult process to balance the two. If you don't entertain and inform in the right amount, people won't finish the book. If they don't finish the book, they won't refer the book, they won't learn. And that's why this thing has killed me. It's just taken it out of me. I'm done. This is the last one, I swear to God. Actually, if you do the math, I'll be about 82 by the next time I write book number 4. It's not gonna happen. But let me just come back to a point that you made, because it's excellent. And I love sharing this story. Advisors that do as you just suggest, which is curate intellectual property. They curate value-added thought leadership, are always being compared to the advisor who hands out a sleeve of premium golf balls. A book costs the same as 3 golf balls. Now, I can tell you what I think about, I love getting golf balls, don't get me wrong, but I pound them into the ponds all the time. And I forget about the advisor. When someone gives me a book And particularly if they give it to me in a different way, like I read this book and thought about you, and I'd like to hear your thoughts, what you liked, what you didn't like. Let's have a coffee. That tells me volumes about the kind of advisor that I'm talking to. That tells me that, A, advisors don't hand out books that they don't read. So it tells me the advisor's a reader. If they're a reader, they're a lifelong learner. These are the people I want to be dealing with, not the people who hand out pens and trinkets and crap. I mean, this, I keep reminding advisors, they are in such an important and privileged position. They are handling and shaping people's financial futures. We know that lawyers aren't, I keep on picking on lawyers. They buy a lot of my books, by the way. It's really counterintuitive. But listen, lawyers will be the first to admit they're not planners. They'll write a will, but they just take instruction. They don't proactively reach out in 5 years and say, hey, did you sell a business? Did you have a death of a beneficiary? Did you inherit money? Has there been a material change in your life that you ought to come in and we can update your will? If you're waiting for that email or that phone call from a lawyer, you're going to be waiting a long time. That is not what they do. Financial advisors, financial planners, that's their real estate. That is the place where they can have profound impacts on people's lives. And some are doing a great job. And if they are, they're really doing a great job and they're highly successful. And they're really not publicizing it because that's their competitive advantage. And the ones that are just kind of collecting assets, talking about how their guy picks stocks. Listen, I know lots of wealthy people. No one believes them. It's a mug's game. No one believes them.
It's true.
It's not exactly a state secret. No one believes it. It's not the place where you want to differentiate your offering. It's in all the other dark, messy places in people's lives. Clients going through divorce. Clients with children with addictions. Clients without a will, struggling on how to divide their estate. This is where the, I think, good advisors become extraordinary. This is where they really, really step up and own their marketplace by going where other advisors don't. They don't want to go there.
A customized podcast can add credibility and efficiency to your communication efforts. Sifting good prospects from the mass of suspects, staying top of mind with strategic partners, and activating more advocacy from existing clients can be achieved with a turnkey approach. Learn more at proudmouth.com. Do you aspire to consistently attract and keep great clients while driving the enterprise value of your business? Do you want to achieve professional contrast by supplementing your technical ability with a consistent client experience driven by best practices? The Blue Square Toolkit brings the proven Pareto Systems philosophy and process to life in a way that tethers your team so that you can competitor-proof your clients, gain their full empowerment, and attract quality referrals, all while restoring liberation and order in your life, and all in an intuitive, easy-to-use, turnkey solution. Visit bluesquaretoolkit.com to get your 14-day free trial today. I've got a good friend who's a pretty enlightened lawyer. And he says, basically, we get picked on a lot because it's a target-rich environment. Kind of a neat perspective, self-deprecating. But I do agree with you on the golf balls. The impact is great. The shelf life is terrible. I actually said to a friend who gave me some golf balls, I took a great picture. It was morning. The light was amazing. And he had his initials on the golf ball. So I took this picture down low, beautiful backdrop, and then I texted him soon after, and I said, you know what you should put on your golf balls is the words, if found, please call. I said, your phone will ring off the hook because that ball was gone right after I took that picture. But your point about you know, I never trivialize technical ability, but, you know, as I go down the AI rabbit hole, I realize that technical ability is a minimum requirement. It's a given. Fee worthiness, professional contrast, it's not just how a financial advisor manages money, it's everything else. You talk about getting into those dark areas, the unmet needs. The reputational equity can be amplified at a minimum. Giving out a book like The Happy Inheritor or Every Family's Business, the impact is great. It's impossible to dismiss. It's not like I'm going to put it in the recycle bin. It's going to nag at me on my credenza until I actually decide to pick it up and read it. And, you know, the shelf life. I mean, the likelihood that I'm going to hand this to somebody who I feel strongly about, who I think it would resonate with, it's such a great hook and a great bridge. And that's why I'm such a big fan of content and value. Tom, talk to me about what advisors have shared with you in terms of the impact that they've seen from going there. Like after they hold an event, after they sit down in a strategy and tactical meeting with a client and get in and talk about this a month later, 3 months later, how has this impacted their relationships with their best clients?
Well, I've been doing this for 17 years, which is a gentle way of saying you don't do it for 17 years unless you've added some significant value to advisors. It is not an easy profession. As you know, the first 5 years, no one knows you. You write a book. Well, there's 100,000 new titles every year. So to cut through and build a brand, to build a value proposition is not easy. So but if you have something, if you dare to be different, and you know, in my case, I can summarize my books really, really quickly. Every Family's Business. Don't give your business to your children. They need to buy it. No one wrote that book. Willing Wisdom. It's not good enough to write a will. You need to share it with the people who will be impacted by that document. The Happy Inheritor. A family meeting will end with another family meeting because disruptive people will never attend. There it is. Simple ideas, but disruptive ideas. Ideas that are so simple, they're so simple they just might work. We know that we need a will, and yet half of all lawyers in Kelowna, in Palm Springs, in New York City, don't even have a will themselves. The bar is so low. I'm not talking about advanced estate planning, advanced business succession planning, or advanced family meeting strategies. I am talking about the remedial basics. We have advisors who don't even trust themselves enough to have their own family meeting, to explore their own curiosity of what a family meeting looks like in their own particular family. If advisors are not prepared to do the work themselves, and to take note of their pain points, they'll never really ascend to do the extraordinary work that is what the Italians would describe as vocare, the calling. This profession should be a calling. And when advisors wake up and they understand that they are doing work that no one else is doing, they're not building wealth, they're building families, Duncan. The great ones are building families. Building wealth is a commodity. Building extraordinary high-performance families, using money as a conversation point, that's a different game, and very few advisors get it.
So you're saying that a lot of advisors themselves aren't eating their own cooking? Like they don't have a will themselves? They don't have their own continuity and succession plan built out, and they have never done a family meeting, even though they might ask a client to do all this?
Half of all financial planners do not have a will. They should be nervous about the Happy Inheritor because in the book I'm going to give away a little bit of a secret. I tell readers that if they're selecting an advisor, they should ask one question. Ask them what lawyer they used in their community to prepare their will. If a financial advisor doesn't have a will, they can't answer the question. if the financial advisor goes, well, we use Trevor Atkinson over at Polis, Ritchie, and Deans, and they're fabulous. They're good. And if you don't like that firm, I've got two other firms I can send you to. You should look for your own fit. That is the kind of, now that's someone who's in the intergenerational wealth game. They're ready for that question. They've done their own work. They've referred lots of clients to attorneys and lawyers to get their estate plans done. But seriously, half of all advisors would never be able to answer that question because they don't even have their own will.
Boy, that reminds me of when I read Millionaire Next Door, and Tom Stanley said to a high net worth reader, before you give your financial advisor your net worth statement, ask for theirs.
Great, great advice.
Because the premise is you want to be aligned with an advisor who would never ask you to do something they wouldn't do themselves. Happy inheritor, do you get into the ramp up, the execution, and the follow up of the family meeting?
Absolutely.
You get into the structure and the checklist and the to dos?
Yep. Sample mission statement, confidentiality statements, what the first meeting agenda looks like, what the second one looks like. I talk about the seven big, you know, taboo subjects that most families really don't want to talk about, but must if there's going to be an orderly transition of family wealth, and how and when to introduce these ideas sequentially in a family meeting process. It is a great, great read. And again, it's all written in an entertaining format. Three people in a bar in New York City, the day before they're going to facilitate, these are three professionals that are going to facilitate a family meeting, billionaire family who has never met. There are billionaire families that have never had a family meeting. There's billionaires without wills. Anyway, it's a fun read. It's a super, super fast read that will give not only the advisor, but their clients wind in their sails to say, let's do this. Here's the best part. It's self-selecting. Families where there is something going on, where there may be some really problematic personality disorder. I refer in the book a little bit about narcissism. There's about 10 million narcissists. These are people that don't have personality traits. They have enough traits and they're persistent enough that they would be diagnosed with NPD. So narcissistic personality disorder, very disruptive in the family system. Thin skin, prone to anger, controlling, manipulative. I mean, there's lots of material on this, but you never, as an advisor who is worried about holding a family meeting and opening up a can of worms and losing the client because it spins out of control, set that aside. You don't have to worry. A narcissist would never attend a family meeting. They would never, not in a million years. They divide family relationships. They don't bring people together. So family meetings are self-selecting. If you actually can get a family to agree, multiple generations, to sit in a room to talk about money, it's going to end fantastic. These are kind people. These are empathetic people. These are lovely people. These are the clients you want. You don't want narcissists. They're litigious. They ruin virtually everything they touch. They leave a swath of destruction in their wake. That is what this book deals with. It is so much fun. It will give people a real sense of what they have alive and well in their own family and whether or not they have enough to proceed with a family meeting. And if they do, and most people do, most people don't have what I just described, they can move forward in a really practical way to have their very first meeting. And one leads to two, and two to three, and three to four. And next thing you know, the family actually looks forward to their annual family meeting. It's a day to celebrate and talk about gratitude and philanthropy and all the great things that they can work on together as a family unit. And I got to tell you, it is something to watch. I tell a story in the book about one of my favorite family meetings. I have to disguise the family and the city. But that day, there were 17 family members, three generations in the room. And you know, Duncan, guess who was chairing that meeting that day? It was a 15-year-old girl, third G3. They rotate the chair. There's no favor to rank or age or wealth. The family meeting is democratic and egalitarian. The best family meetings are around round tables it's not about the person with the most money developing an agenda and exercising control. It's the opposite. The family meeting is the place to relinquish control. It's the place to prepare heirs. When you watch a family in this state with the advisor bringing people together who want to do this, it's really magical to watch.
Just paraphrasing the quote, money doesn't make you, it reveals you. It is very revealing. And I never thought about that perspective around rules of engagement. If a client who's maybe a little bit higher maintenance and some of those attributes that aren't necessarily ideal, if they don't see the merit in a family meeting, maybe it's not a good fit. And maybe that relationship's on a collision course anyway. So interesting perspective on that. I guess the only other question I've got for you, is there going to be an audio book? And if so, are you going to do the voices?
Okay, so I did the voices in Every Family's Business. I don't know if it's on Audible. That was 80 hours in studio for about 2.5 hours of finished product. Oh my, you can bang one out, but you know, it's my book. So I will have to do that. Yes, I will. The answer is yes, but I mean, Willing Wisdom still isn't an audiobook. I've got three characters that I have to perform, and one is a female voice. I don't know, but it's deeply humiliating when I listen to myself do a female. I can't unhear that.
Well, I remember, it's etched. I remember where I was when I first started listening to Every Family's Business and how jarring that one voice was. And then I realized, that's Tom.
That's her.
It's good stuff. Okay, Tom, how can people learn more, find out more about the value you bring, perhaps ordering books, engaging you to present to their clients? How would somebody go about that?
Yeah, just go to my website. It's the title of my book. I send people to willingwisdom.com. It's the shortest URL. It's the easiest, but they can go to everyfamiliesbusiness.com as well. Soon they'll be able to go to the happyinheritor.com. I'm actually going to consolidate into one website, but go to willingwisdom.com. You'll see all my contact information there. I have a very different business model. I don't charge for my speaking. I sell books in lieu of a speaking fee. Mm. I want my books read. Long after I'm gone, people read books and reread them and reread them and share them. I want my books circulating around this planet in great numbers. And that's why I do what I do. So you buy some books, I travel to your community, and I give a speech that's pretty compelling. That's going to make and I tell advisors, free up your schedule because I'm going to bury you in work. No pun intended.
I'm no mathematician, but you said you've been at this for 17 years. You probably lost a couple with that debacle recently. So you've done 2,000 speeches. So you're north of 125 speeches every year.
Yeah. Yeah. And even during the pandemic, I did a couple of hundred webinars. It was
right.
It was brutal.
Help me. I should know this, but can a financial advisor collaborate with a wholesaler to help underwrite some of the costs to get you out there? And
all the time.
Okay.
All the time.
Terrific. Yep. All right. Well, we'll provide more information when we post this live. It never feels like work having a conversation with you. And it's startling to me to realize how much of an unmet need this is and how this has to be addressed. And it's just escalating. So please, everybody, if you're not already on top of this, consider how you can address this. It's got to be phenomenal for reframing relationships to go back to existing long-term clients in a strategy and tactical meeting and say, hey, you know, part of our process is to address these continuity and succession and family investment legacy issues. I think now would be a very good time to activate that process. Do you have some specific messaging and positioning for a financial advisor to use to be client-facing, to get this on their radar?
Oh, 100%. I think language that goes something like this. I have just recently updated my own will, and it really brought to the forefront the importance that all my clients have updated estate planning documents. Can we get together? Can you bring your documents? Can I give it a quick read? Can I make sure that you're in a good place? I'll tell you what's going to happen. It's going to, well, first of all, if you don't have a copy and if you haven't read your client's will, you have no idea where their wealth is going. Wouldn't you want, aren't you curious? It'll tell you where you might want to be spending a little time developing relationships with the next generation. Duh. But if half your clients don't have a will, or if you haven't offered to read it or review it, I just don't understand it. This, what I'm describing, is both an opportunity and a threat, quite frankly, for advisors. Mm-hmm. Money is moving somewhere. And if you're not out in front of that and knowing where it's going and helping smooth that transition and become a solution to that, you're going to lose clients at the moment in time where you think you're going to have something to sell, that you're going to have a book of business to sell. You're going to have old clients who are going to be leaving. You're going to have a declining asset. I can think of no other industry that is designed this way. And the solution is so easy.
I had a conversation recently with Ted Jenkin, who helps it. He's an advisor to advisors on exit strategy. And enterprise value is actually enhanced by the depth of impact a financial advisor has within a family, up and down the family tree. It's actually quite fascinating. I wanted to ask you, I wrote down a couple of stats. So did I hear right? 50% of business owners have no will. 90% of business owners have no continuity and succession plan or exit strategy. Did I get that right?
Well, we didn't talk about that, but that number is actually very close. It's about 85% of business owners have no formal business succession plan. Well, first of all, if they don't have a will, they don't have an exit plan. Now, the state or province that they live in does. There's a nifty little formula in British Columbia or California that's waiting for that. They're going to divide up that business owner's business along with his canoe and barbecue according to the state or provincial formula. They don't care who he is. Seriously, we spend an entire life building wealth, and then we are so capricious and indifferent to how we transition it. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. 4 U.S. presidents die without a will. 2 are lawyers.
Hey, that is a fun fact.
Fun fact.
And incidentally, you can always tell a Canadian, even though a lot of your work's done in the United States, you can always tell a Canadian when he refers to a canoe and a barbecue.
And process, not process.
Yeah,
well, I get busted on that all the time.
Yeah, me too. Okay, Tom, fantastic. You covered a lot of ground. I appreciate that. And I definitely encourage everybody to go to the Willing Wisdom site or the Every Family Business site. And looking forward to The Happy Inheritor. I want to read that book, and we'll have to have you back. Thanks very much.
We'll see you in the next airport.
Yeah, exactly. Take it easy.
Thank you for listening to Always On with Duncan McPherson, where our objective is to enable professionals to always be working on their business and on themselves. Want to learn more about Duncan and his team? Visit ParetoSystems.com. Don't forget to click the follow button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the hosts and/or guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Pareto Systems. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast is powered by Proudmouth, the Influence Accelerators. If you're like me and want to spend more time educating people and less time selling, Proudmouth helps turn Main Street experts like you into trusted mainstream authorities. They will help amplify your influence over a growing audience of magnetically attracted fans. Visit Proudmouth.com to learn more.